Blog Talk Radio.
These people as a real person with some fantastic strengths in his personal life, his love of family, his love of his wife. He very ostentatiously had a black girl sitting right behind him the entire time, which and I think the people that are sitting behind him are all his friends and colleagues, which puts in mind that he's not, of course, he's not racist. So Neil Gorsuch, dodging bullets on Capitol Hill like an old pro, appears to have this thing in the bag. His natural law understanding of U.S. law and its roots is a comfort, dear ones, when so much chaos exists across the land. So how many more conservative judges can Trump bring onto the court? Now, according to St. Thomas, considered the greatest natural law philosopher, the natural law is, quote, nothing else than the rational creature's participation in the eternal law. The eternal law is God's wisdom, inasmuch as it is the directive norm of all movement and action. When God willed to give existence, and this is from the Catholic Advent online encyclopedia, when God willed to give existence to creatures, he willed to ordain and direct them to an end. In the case of inanimate things, this divine direction is provided for in the nature which God has given to each. In them, determinism reigns. Like all the rest of creation, man is destined by God to an end and receives from him a direction towards this end. This ordination is of a character in harmony with his free, intelligent nature. In virtue of his intelligence and free will, man is master of his conduct. Unlike the things of the mere material world, he can vary his action, act, or abstain from action as he pleases, and yet he is not a lawless being in an ordered universe. In the very constitution of his nature, he too has a law laid down for him, reflecting that ordination and direction of all things, which is the eternal law. The rule then which God has prescribed for our conduct is found in our nature itself. Those actions which conform with its tendencies lead to our destined end and are thereby constituted right, morally good. Those at variance with our nature are wrong and immoral. And so when he follows John Finnis, throughout the work of Finnis, the new theory of natural law is presented as a theory of practical reasonableness. The main aim of this theory is to provide principle in the sense of starting points that guide our reasoning on moral matters. So Thomas Aquinas is quite difficult to follow, and to be quite honest, I mean, I'm sure that Thomas Aquinas knew and probably tried to be difficult to follow at some level, but just because what he was doing was at such a high level. But so anyway, this guy Gorsuch follows the natural law. Now, what is the natural law? We've talked about it before, but the natural law is presented by, well, we had a caller who used to, a caller who no longer calls into the show, but who used to say that the natural law was the law of the Bible, which is, if that was true, you wouldn't need the term natural law because you could just say the law of the Bible. So it's bigger than that. I'm not saying more important, but in terms of the history of law itself has been the most influential and most powerful doctrine ever created. And do I really believe that? I believe that so totally that I think if you looked into the history of law, there's no comparison. You've got the law of the Napoleonic Code. When Napoleon came in, he replaced this ancient French law with legislation, legislated code. And then on the other side that you've got Anglo-American law. And the Anglo-American law in the history of England at one time was almost synonymous with natural law theory. Now we've deviated quite a bit, but the idea of natural law starts off at the ancient Greeks or before, but you've got the ancient Greeks working on it. and such writers as Plato and Aristotle and a lot of others, the Stoics. And then the law intersects with the beginnings of Christianity and is developed by such such philosophers as Augustine and then picked up by Thomas Aquinas. And what Thomas Aquinas does is he puts in equal parts, I would think, the Bible and also Aristotle. Aristotle is heavily impregnated in his work. But so the natural law then gives birth to natural rights. And the natural rights are, when you think of the Bill of Rights, that's one example of them. Life, liberty, and happiness, or life, liberty, and property, other examples of natural rights. So the Constitution is built on a framework of natural law theory. Without that, you couldn't have a Constitution. You could build a Constitution, but it's got to be based on something. If it's the law beyond the law, there has to be an explanation of where it comes from or what it stands for. So then you have positive law, which is man's law, in theory. And then you have God's law, which is, say, the Ten Commandments and the Levitical Code. So such celebrated kings as Henry the Great and Charlemagne, Charles the Great, took the Bible, they took the law in the Bible, and they didn't do what these dominionists want to do, which is to take the Levitical Code, the code from the book of Leviticus, the Old Testament, and just establish it as the law. What they did is they adapted it to their society. And Henry the Great studied the laws of the Bible, and then he took the logic, the mechanics out of the law, and applied it to England. And that's where the common law gets its foundation. According to Winston Churchill, who wrote a five-volume set of the history of England, and was very talented writer and researcher. So update this to now, John Finnis and Gorsuch. Gorsuch is working in the law here, and then he decides he wants to go get a doctorate in the law, and he goes to England. And he goes over there and studies with Finnis, and I've got a clip of Finnis, who is... he's from Australia. He's very, very hard to follow. And I've got some of his books. I can't say I've spent a lot of time in them, but natural law is one of my most favorite topics in terms of interest. And I've got a lot of books on it. And it's kind of fascinating. The question is, and I'll just throw this out to you, is there a law above human law? If not, how would you say anything was unfair? Any ideas were wrong in comparison to what? So, I mean, I think all people believe in some level of a natural law. The ancient Romans had this. You know, they didn't have the Christian background that we in the West do, so they had to use something else, but they had a very practical theory of the law, and their practical theory of law led them to develop law that seemed to be appropriate for various topics, and they didn't need God over that. But one of the problems with ancient Rome is that they had a lot of things that they believed that were not very well worked out. For example, the gods in ancient Rome were coextensive, or coexisted with ancient Rome, and didn't really, there was no explanation for where they came from. And so if you read The Ancient City by Coulanges, he states that the Romans got their theory of law, or pardon me, of religion from worshiping their ancestors. And which kind of develops into this, you know, then you end up with Zeus and et cetera, et cetera. But these are the same gods that they brought from Greece. So I'm sure there's something to this idea that human beings are worshipped as God, and at some point you develop something like this pantheon of the ancient world. So what I'm getting at is the Romans really didn't necessarily, there was a lot of contradictions, and it really didn't bother them. You know, they had they considered themselves the most religious and upright people, but they had a theory of religion that was totally different from, and really, I guess you would argue, inferior to Christianity and Judaism, because the idea of God is so well developed and is such a powerful entity inside the Bible. So, I mean, you can't really compare Roman religion to that. And one of the reasons I think that the Christian religion does so well in Rome is it comes in and it deals with a lot of existential angst or a lot of the problem with Roman religion is it's not really clear. You know, there was a belief that people died and then they were put into the tomb and they continued to exist. It continued to live in a much subdued state. And that's, you know, put food in there and they would give them various implements that they would need. But there was a lot of insecurity. If you ever see the movie Gladiator, there's a fairly accurate idea of what the Roman religion was like. And there's shots of him kind of laying prostrate, laying out flat and everything. And that's a kind of a picture of the tomb. So the Romans were kind of baffled by what happened in the afterlife. And the Christians have this very, and the Jews have this, I guess you would say, very extensively worked out, more so the Christians, heaven and hell. So anyway, not getting too far afield, let's take a break. 619 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Don't have the texter with me, but feel free to call in. And we will be right back. I have a little bit of this Finnish guy for you. And trust me, he is very, very difficult to follow. But he's an extremely important philosopher of the law. Maybe one of the most important philosophers, along with Brian Tierney. And I've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call to the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Kelly. This is your good friend, Bob.
Bob, what's going on? What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. Well, it's New Mexico State University, which I love. And Zoo Library in Branson. But what's happening is that a lot of planning that New Mexico State University really likes to kick out a lot of people for some reason. And I just thought it was a little unfair. But other than that, I'll close by telling you that I think you may be interested in an honorary doctorate at commencement in Mexico State University. What do you think?
That I would be interested in what?
An honorary doctorate at Mexico State University.
For heaven's sakes, I'm sure they wouldn't consider that. But
well, you know it's going to happen, Kelly.
What's that?
You're going to be honored, humbly honored. So get ready to what you're going to say, because you have a voice like I've never heard from anybody else in my entire life, and I love it.
Well, I appreciate that. A lot of people think I got where I did in life through my beautiful looks, but maybe...
Well, you're
maybe,
the best, Kelly. You know that.
Okay, Bob. Thank you so much, Bob. Have a great day.
Yes, sir. Goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. All right. Well, you can't argue with a call like that. But, all right. I wouldn't mind getting a doctorate. That would be fun. It seems like it would be worth a little bit more if you actually went to school for it. But 621 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. I have a question. If a medical school gives you an honorary doctorate, can you go open up your own chop shop, you know? Be right back. 523-1450 AM Las Cruces.
Don't you love her badly? Don't you need her badly? Don't you love her way? Tell me what you say. Don't you love her badly? Wanna meet her daddy? But don't you love her face? Don't you love her as she's walking out the door?
All right, so let me just throw something out for you for, in terms of kind of trying to understand the natural law, because it's been a topic that has been debated and argued over, and there's various versions of the natural law, and the most famous and easy to understand one is this idea that there is the law of God that is written on the heart. And I'm trying to remember what Immanuel Kant said. But he says something about the law of God written on the heart and in the starry firmament, something like that, which is basically just a kind of riff on Paul. But if you don't have a natural law, what you are left with, which is kind of where we're at right now, is this idea is that there are laws and they're made by people, and those laws are, I would say, you know, they're not really eternal laws, they're local laws, they're national laws. But here's the thing. If you have the law of nature, there's certain things that you can address, and I'll give you an example. When the Germans did what they did during World War II, there had been so much progress of positive law in Europe. What the Germans did is they made Jews illegal, and so the things that were done to the Jews were part of the law. And I'm trying to remember what they called the law, Reich, something or other, but. These things that were done to the Jews had to be illegal so that they could prosecute these people. So what they did was they put together a meeting in San Francisco on this dilemma, what to do with the Nazi war criminals. And so out of that comes the Nuremberg trial. But as a result of that, you have the United Nations, which was kind of rebuilding this idea that had come up in previously League of Nations. So what they did is they revived natural law to the extent that it applied to the Nazi war criminals. And the theory was that regardless of whatever the law was in Germany, what they did to the Jews was so horrific that it had to be against some profound sense of law. So that's the issue there. Now, if you just believe in positive law, and positive law comes from I posit, I state, I say, I establish, positive law, positing what the law is, then in theory, you know, you could have a country like the United States, and then outside of our territorial jurisdiction on the, you know, you could have an island somewhere, I guess it would be 200 miles away from the United States, just to be safe. It would be its own sovereign entity, and you could take, you know, children there and torture them all day long, every day. And torture and execute them. And it wouldn't be against the law because the law on your little island didn't, you know, so you've got to have some theory that you apply to suggest that this stuff is wrong or to establish your theory. Now, let me take a little break here and play some local news for you. And then I'm going to play John Finnis and let you hear just, he's I don't want to say his voice is difficult. He's very kind of, I don't want to say distracted, but he's very kind of obtuse when he's talking. He's just hard to follow. And I mean, this is coming from somebody who's really interested in the topic. So he's hard to listen to, but I wanted to give you a clip so you could hear who this Gorsuch has been, who he studied under. 629, MLS Cruises, Sam, 1450. Like 22nd day, March. We'll be right back. Local news.
Tell me what you say. Don't you love her as she's walking out the door?
All right, so I've got this this thing out there, but you know, you've got to just remember there. You know, law comes from somewhere, and it's kind of hard to get rid of natural law theory just for the reasons that I had mentioned, because you have to have a go-to move. Now, one of the things that was coming up in some of the research I was doing last night is that they were saying, well, you know, Gorsuch could have a reason to get rid of abortion and to get rid of gay things like abortion and gay marriage. if he was focused on natural law. And so how that would work is, and I'm not saying that he would, and he said that if Donald Trump came up to him and said, we need to get rid of Roe v. Wade, he would have told him, you know, I don't work that way, basically. Give him a litmus test that, you know, if you go into how it could work on obviously on abortion is pretty simple. You define a fetus as a human baby, which is, I mean, obviously what it is, but if you define it legally as a human being, a human baby, you get rid of the Blackstone or Blackmun argument for viability, then can't really say that people have a right to an abortion. Women don't have a right to an abortion because nobody has a right to kill another person, right? So, and that's one of the things that I believe is, in this is called this kind of neo-natural law, kind of updated natural law. Another thing on something like gay marriage, he would go in there or could go in there. No, I mean, nobody knows what this guy is going to do. They say he's got a very independent streak, which would be consistent in my mind with studying, you know, getting a doctorate in natural law, is you want to study the thing itself. You want to go back to the source and find out what real law is. But if he were to define marriage as something primary, I think what you would do, and this is, as far as I know, the only way to really argue against gay marriage, if that's your cause celebre or whatever, is to say that marriage has to, and this is from the most ancient times, but also in the thing itself, marriage has to have the ability to produce natural offspring. That the purpose of marriage may or may not be to produce offspring, but that a natural marriage, a truly legal marriage, would have to have the ability, in theory, to produce natural offspring. Now, you can argue, well, then you're getting rid of marriages between infertile people or old people. And I would say, to that, I would say, nobody knows that whether they're infertile or not. Many people who thought they were infertile have had children, so that's not a good argument. And if for old people getting married, at one point, if they were married at a younger age, they could have produced children. So anyway, here is, without further ado, here is a couple of things from John Finnis, what is new classical natural law, which is his theory, and he's at the University of Oxford, and he comes from Australia. Here, check it out.
You're obviously famed as a natural law theorist. Could you explain to us the bare bones of new natural law theory?
They ask him, what's the new natural law theory? And these are clips that are put out by Oxford. And I'm telling you, I may not play much of them because they're very hard to follow.
So cool.
Well, I don't like the term new natural law theory. It was invented by a very vigorously hostile critic. And has sort of stuck, and I in vain complain about it and say, no, if it's new, it's a new classical theory. I think of it as an explanation of the sense of having law, why we have law and what it's for, and how all that why and that what for enter into the very content of the law, or should. So law can go wrong. It can be diverse.
All right. This may have been an act of God, speaking of which, but my system just crashed. Let's take a break, and I'll reboot it, and we'll be back on to the next thing. As you can hear there, John Finnis is hard to follow, but let's get into a little bit of Neil Gorsuch when we come back. Here's some weather for you. So, all right, so we were talking about this guy, Finnis, and let's move on to Gorsuch, his very famous, at this point becoming more famous, pupil. Here is 5 things to know about Neil Gorsuch. From a guy by the name of Jason Jimenez.
His pick to replace Scalia on the high court. Who did he pick? He picked Judge Neil Gorsuch. Now, like many of you out there wondering, who on earth is this judge? What does he stand for? Is this good or is this bad? Well, in this video, I'm going to give you 5 key things that are important for you to know about who Judge Gorsuch is. But before I get into these 5 things, let's look at what he's been up to lately. In 2006, President Bush appointed him on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 10th Circuit. That's where he's been residing as a federal judge for the last 10 years. His education consists of having an undergrad at Columbia University in New York. He got his J.D. at Harvard Law, and he got his doctorate and studied under the legendary John Finnis, who is an amazing natural lawyer and philosopher. All right, so the first thing you need to know about Judge Gorsuch is that he is an originalist. Just like Scalia, Judge Gorsuch believes that the Constitution is to be taken literally and the interpretation as plain as possible, meaning what the drafters intended then is how we're to interpret it today. Unlike people like Ginsburg, who believes the Constitution is a living, breathing document, Judge Gorsuch believes that we are to take it as the framers intended, not in how they interpret it today. That's great news. The second thing you need to know about Judge Gorsuch is that he is a strong defender of life. This is awesome because I think a lot of evangelicals, a lot of Christians, a lot of conservative people have been wanting and praying and waiting to have a judge that is pro-life. The third thing you need to know about Judge Gorsuch is that he is a champion of religious freedom. Remember the case with Hobby Lobby? Judge Gorsuch made sure that the federal government was not infringing upon their religious convictions. The whole contraceptive mandate, he made sure that that didn't happen. He said essentially that they were an unconstitutional burden. And number two, it just was bad law. And number four, he is a great challenger against overcriminalization and federal regulation. You may be wondering, Jason, what do you mean by that? Limited government, baby. And number five, Judge Gorsuch is a strong advocate for the Fourth Amendment. Ever heard of something called due process? This is important because one thing that Judge Gorsuch has said in a lot of his rulings is even though as technology is advancing and we're catching more criminals, that's a good thing, but it can bring more risk of abuse of governments infringing and invading on our constitutional rights. So it's great to have a judge like Judge Gorsuch sitting on the high courts.
So when you're thinking about NSA and all this stuff, he'd be somebody that would push back against that. I do think the law in the United States has gotten so far off track. We need someone with a natural law background to counterbalance it. Now, here's a little bit from Fox News, what Neil Gorsuch sees that justice Scalia, RIP, did not.
All right, the late Antonin Scalia was seen as a champion of religious liberty during his years on the Supreme Court, and now some are saying his possible replacement, Judge Neil Gorsuch, might not only meet the standard, but could surpass it? Joining us right now is former Deputy Assistant General Tom Dupree. Tom, that's a pretty high bar for conservatives. He's the ultimate definition of the perfect Supreme Court justice. How could possibly Gorsuch surpass him?
Well, Brian, I agree with you. It is very difficult for me to envision anyone surpassing Justice Scalia, who is terrific and will always be legendary. That said, Judge Gorsuch is pretty terrific, too. One thing we've seen in his opinions as an appeals court judge is that he's not afraid to question settled law. He will faithfully apply it if it's something coming from the Supreme Court. But at the same time, he's shown a willingness to question, to go back to first principles and to say, does this legal rule that we've been following for the last 30 years really make sense?
Right. And of course, the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice will have to say, I see where you're coming from with this. Here's an example of what Gorsuch says on religious freedom. He says the act on the Religious Freedom Act, the act doesn't just apply to protect popular religious beliefs. It does perhaps its most important work in protecting unpopular religious beliefs, vindicating this nation's long held aspiration to serve as a refuge for religious tolerance. What do you read into that?
Well, what I read to that is that Judge Gorsuch is faithful to what our founders meant and intended when they enacted the First Amendment and the Free Exercise Clause. What he's saying is that it's not for the courts to say, well, this is a major religion, this is a minor religion. Rather, what Judge Gorsuch is saying is that under the First Amendment, religion is religion.
Right.
It must be respected. Religious beliefs must be defended.
Senator Blumenthal says, hey, if it comes down to Roe v. Wade, I have a sense he wants to overturn it. If that happens, I'm going to go to the mat to stop this. Is anything that he said show that he wants to overturn it?
I don't think he said anything one way or the other about Roe v. Wade. I think that he has shown, number one, he is faithful to the original intent of our founders and the plain text of the Constitution. Number two, he's shown that he's not afraid to question what others might consider settled law. So we'll see. I don't think we're going to get straight questions, straight answers on that particular issue today in the confirmation hearing, but it's certainly something that's going to be on a lot of senators' minds.
All right, 4 days. At the end of these 4 days, what do you expect? The Republicans to need the nuclear option or not?
I don't think so, because here's what I think is going to happen, Brian. I think when people see Judge Gorsuch, even those who might be ideologically opposed to him, they're going to say, look, we may not agree with everything, but there's no question this is a smart,
right,
qualified judge. And I think they're going to vote to confirm.
Nancy Pelosi says, but if you like clean air, you won't vote for him. So, or if you breathe. So we'll see. Too bad she doesn't have a vote. Thanks so much.
All right. So here is an answer from Gorsuch on one of the questions.
This is the 14th Supreme Court hearing that I participated in, so I have a pretty good idea of some of the questions that you're going to get today. You're going to be asked to make promises and commitments about how you'll rule on particular issues. Now, they won't necessarily ask you that directly. For instance, how you rule on this issue or that issue. Instead, they'll probably ask you about old cases, whether they were correctly decided. Of course, that's another way of asking the very same question. They know that you can't answer, but they're going to ask you anyway. I've heard justices nominated by presidents of, of both parties decline to answer questions like these. That's because, as the nominee put it, quote, a judge sworn to decide impartially can offer no forecasts, no hints, for that would show not only disregard for the specifics of this particular case, it would display disdain for the entire judicial process, end of quote. Now, you probably know that's what Justice Ginsburg said at her hearing, and it's what we call the Ginsburg standard. The underlying reason for this is, of course, is that making promises or even giving hints undermines the very independence that we just talked about. I'd like to ask you if you agree with what I just said.
I do, Mr. Chairman.
So let me ask you about a couple of Supreme Court cases. In Heller, the Supreme Court held that the Second Amendment protects an individual right to bear arms. If I ask you to tell me whether Heller was rightly decided, could you answer that question for me?
Senator, I'd respectfully respond that it is a precedent of the United States Supreme Court. And as a good judge, you don't approach that question anew as if it had never been decided. That would be a wrong way to approach it. My personal views, I'd also tell you, Mr. Chairman, belong over here. I leave those at home. Mr. Kochel yesterday said that what he wants is a fair judge. And that's what I wanted as a lawyer. I just wanted a judge to come in and decide on the facts and the law of my client's case and leave what he had for breakfast at the breakfast table. And part of being a good judge is coming in and taking precedent as it stands. And your personal views about the precedent have absolutely nothing to do with a good job of a judge.
That's called stare decisis in the law. Now, I've got another break for you here, but I've first got some, believe it or not, new storms coming into California, one after another. They're on another conveyor belt. It's the Pineapple Express. It's running again over California and into the west, and I'm sure we'll be affected by it too. Check this out.
It's going to be right back to the parade of storms in the West this week. Now, it's not going to be bad as what we saw a couple of weeks ago with all the flooding and all that kind of stuff. But you kind of know the drill with these storms at this point. You get a lot of rain in certain areas. And then, of course, in the high terrain, you get a lot of snow. And it's already raining in parts of California right now, snowing parts of California as well. And look at the big picture here. There's actually a couple of storms. So you've got the one that's hitting right now. You've got another one about 2 days behind it. And then there's another one about 2 days behind that one. So you look for these little counterclockwise spinning things in the Pacific, and those are what produce the bad weather that comes into the West. So I mentioned flooding not likely to be a big issue with this because we get little breaks in between. So you see Thursday, a little bit of a break, and then Friday we're back to the rain and the snow. And then Saturday there's a little break, and then guess what? Right behind that, Sunday, another round of some rain and snow. Now, when all said and done, parts of Northern California could see 2 to 3 inches of rain. I would say just kind of watch out. Maybe if you live around the creeks and streams and they start to run a little bit high, if you get caught under a couple of storms in a row. But apart from that, not expecting widespread flooding.
And believe it or not, Oroville Dam, or Oroville is going to get 2 to 3 more inches. 652 AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. We'll be right back. All right. So, what would Gorsuch do if he was asked about Roe v. Wade? And I've got a little clip right here with Lindsey Graham. Lindsey Graham Cracker, Lindsey the Cracker.
Here today, confronting a nomination of one of the most qualified people I think President Trump could have chosen from the conservative world. You are not an unfit person. I don't think there's any reason to suggest that you're his favorite. Had you ever met President Trump personally?
Not until my interview.
In that interview, did he ever ask you to overrule Roe v. Wade?
No, Senator.
What would he have done if he'd asked?
Senator, I would have walked out the door. Not what judges do.
Okay.
They don't do it at that end of Pennsylvania Avenue, and they shouldn't do it at this end either, respectfully.
All right, here's a little reaction from Brian Williams, who was commenting on it's tough to lay a glove on this guy. And this is from MSNBC, of course. If I can get this puppy moving. All right, so hold on 1 second here. And I think you'll find this interesting.
I think the expression in English is It's tough to lay a glove on this guy.
I didn't see a single glove laid on him. He performed himself admirably, calmly at almost all times, and with detail, but never much candor about his views, which many experts would say he's not supposed to.
I think that this has been a slam dunk in terms of his initial Q's and A's. You're going to see some of the more intensive questioning, but they have not, as you put it, laid a glove on him. Senator Feinstein and Senator Grassley, both under some pressure, certainly the Democrats under a lot of pressure because of what happened with Merrick Garland. And they are getting criticized by the, you know, left wing of the party for not going after him harder. But they have not been able to, you know, shake this guy. He is obviously the consummate witness and very much a good performer in the hot seat there.
Consummate, I believe, is the word she was searching for. Okay, 6:57, and talking mostly about Neil Gorsuch so far, and let's get to just a few of your headlines. North Korea accelerating first strike nuke plan. Missiles burning on launch pad. Did United States sabotage? Well, we've sabotaged them before. Stocks are falling. Worst day since election yesterday, ending longest streak of calm since 1995. Doubts about the tax cuts, the size of it, and when it'll be instituted. One third of Americans would have trouble finding an emergency $2,000, and that is the result of 8+ years of economic failure. You can praise Obama up and down and call him God on earth, as many people did, including my buddy Pete, but he failed in so many different ways. It's very sad. Sears warning of substantial doubt about company's future, meaning that it's going to go into bankruptcy. And the owner is a guy by the name of Eddie Lampert, who was acted like a real fool. Payless Shoes filing for bankruptcy as soon as next week. And sales of fine art are down, way down. And supposedly, Paul Manafort was planning on, an assistant of Trump, was planning to try to help the Putin government. But all of the stuff that's coming out is just more attempts to tarnish Trump with Russia when they haven't even proved there's been any connection between the two. Let's take a break on the hour. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450, and we will be back after it hits 7.
All your love, all your love, all your love, all your love, all your love is gone. We'll sing a lonely song of a deep blue dream. 7 horses sing. We'll be right back.
All right. 22nd March. And we've spent a lot of time talking about Neil Gorsuch. And he's the guy that's running for the Supreme Court. Yeah, so here's some more headlines for you. Donald Trump has got an uphill battle selling the health care change, but according to Rand Paul, it's dead on arrival, so they're going to have to go back and work some more on it. But at least they're working on it. I mean, there's no doubt that that's better than just letting it destroy everybody. North Korean missile explodes seconds after launch. They feel like that could be because of sabotage from America. All right, let's see what else we've got here. Well, I think most stuff is happening over on Capitol Hill, so let's go into it. Oh, just want to pick up a little bit on what's going on with the claims that Russia was instrumental in the campaign of Donald Trump and the Trump campaign was in contact with him. There's no evidence of that, that there was any collusion. And the question of whether Trump was surveilled, I think, is dealt with right here by Britt Hume and on Tucker's show.
FBI Director James Comey's testimony before Congress yesterday revealed pretty much nothing new about President Trump and Russia. We've known for months that so far there's no evidence that Russia actually changed any votes in the election or that they collaborated with the Trump campaign. Comey's testimony did nothing to change. Despite this, congressional Democrats have been in a purity spiral, each trying to outdo his colleagues and calling the president illegitimate and the Russians' behavior an act of war. What exactly is going on here? Fox News senior political analyst Britt Hume joins us tonight. So, Britt, you want to, as an American, you want to feel good about the FBI director. I can't remember ever worrying about one. You don't want to think that their behavior is flaky or there's something else going on. But watching the director of the FBI yesterday openly say, yes, we're investigating this one thing, the Trump campaign, but no, I can't comment on a potential investigation into the leaking of the conversation between Michael Flynn and the Russian ambassador on the other, this sort of raised the question, what is going on here exactly?
Well, it does raise that question, Tucker, and you kind of suspect, one sort of suspects that this is the bookend of his earlier handling of the Hillary Clinton investigation. You remember when he came out publicly and announced that it was underway and then that it had been closed and then finally that it had been reopened and then again it had been closed. And I think that he may have felt that that this was, you know, this was a payback call, having done that and caught such grief for it. Now, of course, obviously, you wonder, you know, why the need to do this. I think it's reasonable to suggest that FBI directors should not be making public the facts of the fact that an investigation is being held or even the facts that are contained within the findings of that investigation. You're supposed to make a recommendation to the Department of Justice. Prosecutorial decisions are supposedly left to the Department of Justice. And that didn't happen in the Hillary Clinton case. And one, Lord only knows what will happen here.
So interesting. So this story seems to me has such momentum that it's hard to imagine when it will slow down. The idea that Russia somehow, as the Democrats are saying, hacked our election. Is there anything at the core of this that you can see? And do you think the story goes away anytime soon?
Well, the Democrats used the hearing to lay out their case for, you know, this investigation and the fact that there may be collusion between the Russians and the Trump campaign. And when you go through this, if you listen to it all, it sounds sort of impressive when they lay all these things out. But when you examine them one by one, none of them really adds up to any evidence of collusion. There's evidence of certainly evidence of contacts. There's evidence of Russian intention to try to torpedo Hillary Clinton. It's worth noting here, by the way, that the Russians gave up somewhere along the way on Donald Trump's possibilities, and they were content just to try to hurt her and thereby possibly help him, but that wasn't their focus. They thought he was going to lose. An odd way to act with someone with whom you're colluding, but there you go. Now, there's one other thing worth mentioning here. The FBI director also said in answer to questions that he had found no evidence, no information pointing to a wiretap of Donald Trump or of Trump Tower. No evidence of that. However, what about this investigation that's been going on that he announced since last July that involves the Trump campaign and Trump associates?
Great question.
Are we to believe that there's no surveillance associated with that? We do know, as you pointed out, that Mike Flynn was caught up in a wiretap. That might be in a routine national security wiretap of the Russian ambassador to whom he was speaking. But who knows? And remember, there's this, when he made this announcement, Comey, that there was this investigation going on, which he said he'd received permission from higher up to do this, the announcement. There was a story back on January the 19th in the New York Times, which basically laid this whole thing out and said it was based on surveillance that indicated there'd been these contacts. That story also said that it wasn't clear that the wiretaps had turned out being about the Trump campaign. So we don't kind of know where we are. And remember also this. This is supposedly a counterintelligence investigation, which is, you know, that means it's basically a national security matter. So what's up with that? I mean, what does that tell us about how likely they are to find out about political collusion? One wonders.
Is that, you just made the smartest point of the month, if not year. If there was an investigation, and there was surveillance. Thank you for making that point.
Well, it's just worth, it's certainly worth asking the question, isn't it? And you might have thought that members of the committee would ask the question, and you might also have thought that the issue might have been raised by some of our colleagues in the media. So far, not so much.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you. I'm sick of James Comey, and I really think he should be replaced, not because he's, you know, and you can argue that if it wasn't for Comey, you know, Trump wouldn't have won. But, I mean, I just think that he's a distraction. And he gets up there and he, you know, he tells people that I have great rectitude. I have an incredible integrity. And let you know what's going on lately in the department I just think he's become a distraction, and I think he's lost a lot of credibility. And you know, him getting up and pounding his chest and talking about, you know, what great character he has, is, it just seems like a disaster. Now, here's a little bit more on surveilling a political opponent.
This investigation was said to start in July. So we had two major party candidates under investigation by the FBI.
I don't know if it's fair to say that Trump himself was under investigation so much as
the campaign. Yeah, yeah.
But this is also speaking again to how we're kind of having it both ways. We have had people surveilled since July. We have had stories in the mainstream media, Washington Post, New York Times, CNN, snippets of surveillance, snippets of transcripts of information, all these allegations. And there is, you know, and then when Donald Trump actually says that he's being wiretapped because he's so silly or clumsy about how he says it, now we say that we can't talk about it because of how he overstepped it. But we really should be having a conversation about the surveillance of a political opponent during a campaign and what that means, particularly with the complete lack of actual evidence that we have of any problem. We have had so much smoke and no actual fire, and it's really time we kind of get that.
Yeah. Paul Manafort.
And so, I mean, you know, what's this idea that there's no evidence for, there's no evidence to show that Trump was wiretapped. I mean, obviously these guys have an investigation. The investigation is made out of something. If you're not wiretapping him and going into his emails, if you're not, you know, monitoring his phone and his texts and everything, what's the investigation? I mean, were they really supposed to not be doing that stuff? And then everybody says, obviously Trump is making this up. And by the way, you're still under investigation to make him look bad. And the fact of the matter is, if he's under investigation, like Britt Hume said, they're wiretapping him.
Say that are part of.
Here is Trey Gowdy. He's interviewing James Comey on who has the right to unmask people's names in a highly confidential investigation?
Unmasking process. How many people within the FBI are part of the unmasking process?
I don't know for sure as I sit here.
Unmasking, by the way, is to take away the secretive part. In other words, laying out people's names who are being surveilled.
Surely more, given the nature of the FBI's work, we come into contact with U.S. persons a whole lot more than the NSA does, because we may be conducting, we only conduct our operations in the United States to collect electronic surveillance, to conduct electronic surveillance. So I can find out the exact number. I don't know it as I sit here.
Well, I think, Director Comey, given the fact that you and I agree this is critical, vital, indispensable, a similar program is coming up for reauthorization this fall with a pretty strong headwind right now. It would be nice to know the universe of people who have the power to unmask a U.S. citizen's name, because that might provide something of a roadmap to investigate who might have actually disseminated a masked U.S. citizen's name.
Sure, the number is relevant, but what I hope the American people will realize is the number is important, but the culture behind it is, in fact, more important. The training, the rigor, the discipline. We are obsessive about FISA and the FBI for reasons I hope make sense to this committee, but we are. Everything that's FISA has to be labeled in such a way to warn people, this is FISA. We treat this in a special way.
Well, it hasn't worked. And James Comey there and basically says in so many ways, me and my group are above scrutiny. And then he just does crazy stuff. 7:18 a.m. Las Cruces. And I mean crazy by there's no predicting what the guy is going to do. And it always seems to harm somebody. 523-1450 to call in 7:18 on a.m. Las Cruces. We'll be back in just a moment.
Love me two times, baby. Love me twice today. Love me two times, girl. I'm gone away.
Just a little bit more on these leaks by the, you know, I mean, James Comey, I'm sorry, just don't buy the guy's shtick anymore. I think he does more harm than good. And maybe he's a fantastic person, but he's, you know, one of these people who, you know, we all hear people, I don't like to be in the center of attention. I'm very shy. And then they do everything they can to be, you know, at the... at the center of a carnival. Here's a little bit from Gingrich.
I do want to say the proceeds go to Folds of Honor again. We love that organization, so we're giving 10% to that organization again. But congratulations on all of your success.
Well.
And you know a thing or two about
I hope your next book's also a bestseller.
Thank you.
It's a great concept.
She's
doing something. She's got a great idea. Hayden meets Ellis the Elephant. I think that's going to be a real star.
And Hayden loves Calista's books.
That's right.
They're wonderful.
All right.
Well, we'll get Hayden and Ellis the Elephant. There's a little stuffed Ellis toy that we'll make sure we'll send up to you, Ainsley,
for
Hayden.
That's
okay?
Really sweet of you.
Sorry about the beginning of this, but it's part of the clip.
Thanks.
All right. All right.
So, Newt, what was your headline from the Comey-Rogers hearing yesterday?
Oh, how amazingly political Comey is. He can explain anything which sounds like it'd be a soundbite that would hurt Donald Trump, he can say. Anything which would reflect on the Obama administration's leaking, the Obama administration's ability to break the law, he can't comment on at all. It was, you know, the 97% of the money given to politics by the Justice Department employees went to Hillary Clinton, 97%. The place is filled with liberal lawyers who are very eager to destroy the Trump administration. And I thought what Comey did, and I mean, Trey Gowdy was very gentlemanly and very cautious in the way he described it. But here you have the FBI director saying, oh, sure, we're investigating this about Trump. Oh, gee, I can't comment on the clear illegality of committing a felony by releasing American secrets, which could only have come from people in the Obama administration. I mean, nobody else had the secrets. And I think that it's he went out of his way at one point when asked about Susan Rice to say, well, she might have known about this, but other national security advisors would have, too. Well, there's no other national security advisor involved.
Yeah.
But again and again, he tried to sort of soften it for the Obama people while being quite cheerful about defining. And then, by the way, remember, the people they're talking about were not in the Trump campaign. In fact, they had a letter from lawyers telling them to cease and desist because they could not claim to be part of the Trump campaign.
Carter Page is one of them. Roger Stone is another one. And you have Paul Manafort, who was running the campaign for a while, but was let go because of his Eastern European ties, allegedly.
All right, let's go on to this other clip from Hannity on this issue. And then in the next half an hour, I want to go over some of the immigration news that's coming out about some of the safety concerns with attacks from illegals that I think you'll find interesting.
Do you have any evidence that Russia cyber actors changed vote tallies in the state?
This is Nunes, Representative Nunes, asking what they found from Russia, and this is an open Congress meeting, committee meeting.
Of Michigan.
No, I do not, but I would highlight we're a foreign intelligence organization, not a domestic intelligence organization. So it would be fair to say we are probably not the best organization to provide a more complete answer.
How about the state of Pennsylvania?
No, sir.
The state of Wisconsin?
No, sir.
State of Florida?
No, sir.
The state of North Carolina?
No, sir.
The state of Ohio?
No, sir.
So you have no intelligence that suggests or evidence that suggests any votes were changed?
I have nothing generated by the National Security Agency, sir.
Director Comey, do you have any evidence at the FBI that any votes were changed in the states that I mentioned to Admiral Rogers?
No.
All right, that was the FBI Director James Comey, Admiral Rogers, both saying Russia did not influence the vote tallies in the 2016 election. Just like James Clapper, National Director of Intelligence, here with Reaction, Laura Ingraham. You know, I watched this yesterday, and I watched the media coverage of all this.
Oh, my God.
I'm thinking, you know, it's hilarious because it's the media that said Trump Tower was wiretapped. The media said all that. All these guys say it doesn't impact the election. They said they've hacked us and tried to influence past elections. They'll try to influence the 2018 election, the 2020 election. Why is the media obsessed about this with no evidence for 8 months?
They were hoping that this was going to be the smoking gun, as Maxine Waters tweeted yesterday, I think it was yesterday, that get ready, we're one step closer to impeachment. It's just the most ridiculous commentary and breathless reporting from the media, Sean, who are desperate to try to find some Russian web of spies working with, you know, I don't know, just pick your Trump staffer. And nothing's come to the fore. The big reveal yesterday was something Trump already conceded in that Tucker Carlson interview. And he said, well, look, the New York Times is reporting that, you know, some of my former associates or aides had been surveilled. And so what did Comey say? Well, I have no knowledge of any wiretap of Trump Tower, and none of the other intelligence agencies do either. That was the big get from yesterday's hearing. I just thought it was a big nothing.
Yeah, but it's even deeper than that. We have been reporting this for 2 weeks, you know,
right?
Because you've been on and watching Sarah Carter and John Solomon. They said, yeah, they didn't say wiretapping. All right, now are we playing word games? Is the FBI director playing word games? Okay, not wiretap, but was there surveillance? Were there two warrants? Was the Trump server surveilled? The Trump Tower server surveilled? The answer appears to be yes. And as an ancillary look at pings from a Russian, you know, bank, big deal. And you would think that they're allowing this conspiracy theory of the media to go on, what, for another year, another 8 months? When do they say definitively nothing happened?
Well, it certainly does lend belief to this idea that intelligence has become, in some circles, really politicized. The real shocker is that in a hotly contested election year, the FBI director was briefing the president of the United States on an ongoing investigation involving an opposition candidate. And we don't really know what happened in, you know, that briefing. He wouldn't go into that yesterday. But
it was very strange that the president gets briefed, but the congressional leaders weren't briefed until yesterday, or, you know, yesterday, the day before yesterday, with the full,
how did Hillary,
you know,
Clinton find out? Remember, she tweeted out. How did Harry Reid find out?
Exactly. So, but he would not answer those questions, because earlier in the interview, in the hearing, he said, well, regularly we inform the White House and the other intelligence agencies and the congressional.
All right. So my takeaway from this is James Comey has to be removed. And the reason I say that is it is not even clear what exactly he's doing. What's his purpose? It was confusing when Hillary Clinton was coming under fire from him. And I'm sure that if you're a Hillary Clinton fan, you think that he treated her unfairly, and maybe he did. Now, the fact that she might have been guilty of a lot of stuff doesn't really, I mean, it might make up for that, but it doesn't really cure the issue that he acted in a way that was very harmful to her during a national election. And I mean, I'm not really complaining, because I mean, honestly, I couldn't stand Hillary, and I thought she would have been a disaster for America. But my point here is if this guy is truly a wild card, where does this end? And, you know, maybe Hillary Clinton was a good person to be victimized by him, but it's still not really fair what he did, the way he did it. Even if Hillary was caught kind of in her own devices, it's not really an excuse for him just kind of running amok. We'll take a little segue here for some local news. Kelly O'Connell, 7:30 a.m., Las Cruces AM, 1450, 523, 1450. And here's your news coming up.
Love me two times, I'm gone away.
All right, so there's some stuff out there I thought that you would want to hear about and possibly discuss. 523-1450. There's some rapes that have occurred, and they've been tied to illegal activity, illegal people, illegal aliens, undocumented persons. And so the issue is, and I think this is out there, I mean, it's something that has to be addressed. And if you're a pro illegal immigrant person, feel free to call in. But I think the issue is, are these sanctuary cities in which we've joined in, sanctuary counties, are they a haven for criminal activity? Don't they, obviously, by definition, they draw illegals, undocumented people that are here in the country. By definition, that's what they're meant to do. And some of the people that are here illegally are here because they were in flight from Mexico and other places because they didn't want to be subjected to the legal system there. They're criminals, they're felons. Check this out.
And is now going national. It was a question today in the briefing at the White House. Here is Press Secretary Sean Spicer and his reaction to this earlier today. Watch.
This young woman in particular fought to come to this country legally because of the freedoms and the treasures of this nation. And to think that this kind of tragedy would occur to someone who's personally endured that kind of struggle to come to this nation and then face this is reprehensible. And it is not who we are as a country. There's so many facets of this case that deserve question. Why was there, I think he was 17 or 18 years old, 18, thank you. And how does that person get put into the ninth grade? There's so many issues that come up in this case. I will leave it to authorities to get through, but I think that we are in the early stages of this and there's a lot that needs to get addressed with respect to this case in particular.
So here with me now is Kimberly Allman. She is the mother of a student at Rockville High School. Kimberly, welcome. Thank you very much for talking with us tonight. I know it's a tough time for all of you.
It truly is. And thank you very much, Martha, for helping to shine a light on what's going on here in our community. My son happens to be a student here at Rockville, and I've had two other children go through here. I'm happy to be here tonight because you're shining a light on what's going on and how it affects everyone.
Kimberly,
what is it that you want to know?
Let me just start with a question. You know, in terms of the reaction of the parents in that meeting tonight, what were some of the things that they were asking? What do they want to know about how a 17 and an 18-year-old end up in a ninth grade in a situation where they can perpetrate this kind of crime, alleged crime, against a 14-year-old girl?
Well, it's amazing. Over the last couple of days, as all of us parents have found out more details about what's happened, we've all been just absolutely shocked because we need to know how this happened, but not to place blame on the school system or anyone else. We can do that later. We want to make sure that we know how to prevent these situations in the future. Our governor came out today and he used very strong words. He used the words that I need to hear and so many of the parents here need to. If you look behind me and you see these parents here in this parking lot here, Governor Hogan used the words that I want to hear, not the washed down language that we heard from the last administration. And
what did he say?
The blame where it is.
All right. This is a little bit hard to follow. So I want to get into, let's see here. All right. Here is, I think this is a different clip, but what's going on in this rape? 14-year-old girl raped by a guy that should not have been in high school and he was illegal.
In a Maryland community where illegal immigrants are accused of sexually assaulting a 14-year-old girl.
Leaders there on the verge of declaring sanctuary status, fueling an already heated immigration blame game. Anita Vogel joins us live now with the very latest on this. Anita, good morning.
Well, good morning, Abby and Rob. That's right. This story is causing shockwaves around the nation. Parents in Rockville, Maryland are not only furious, they're terrified about the safety of their own children. Gathering across the street from the high school, Rockville High School, and attending a PTA meeting last night, demanding answers as to why two immigrants were admitted as freshman students without criminal background checks.
What is the next step for to make our kids safe? I have a mother daughter coming next year here. The law that governed that immigration, that put a kid illegally in a school, that is more my concern than anything else.
Put down parameters to keep the worst of the worst out. They're just come in. You're 20 years old, come on in. Go to high school with a 14-year-old.
The suspect's 18-year-old Henry Sanchez Millon, who was stopped by ICE in 2016, illegally crossing the Texas border, and 17-year-old Jose Montano are both charged as adults, accused of forcing their young classmate into a school bathroom and maliciously violating her during school hours.
We don't have any capacity to check into immigration, nor would we check into criminal.
One of the two individuals that was apprehended was actually stopped by ICE in Texas and released. How is this on us?
Rockville has not officially declared sanctuary status. However, city leaders are in the process of debating it in a county that's notorious for failing to cooperate with federal immigration authorities.
The city should look at its
policy. All right, so here's a question for you. Are we in the same situation where we've got sanctuary status, we're labeled as a sanctuary city, and we've got very pompous pronouncements from city councilors and county commissioners, et cetera, on the importance of being a sanctuary place? I mean, how about this? Sanctuary cities are an idea in the mind of a liberal that once again is hit by what almost all liberal ideas are hit with, the law of unintended consequences. You can make a sanctuary status, a sanctuary city, county, whatever. You could be like California, make a sanctuary state. But do your good intentions really protect the people that you are vested with advocating for? I mean, if a number, would you blame people inside the United States or from other countries coming here because they knew that they're illegal and they have a criminal background? Would you blame them from coming here where they feel like they could be more safe? That's just human nature. But what about all the people that could be hurt from these individuals that would be drawn? And that's, you have the same problem in San Francisco, where that guy shot for really no, it was just a random, this guy who had been kicked out of the country, I think, 7 times and was a felon and shot that Katie Steinle, I think her name was. It was just a random shooting. And so people who have a criminal background, maybe they're mentally ill, but coming to America and looking for a place to hide, and we're providing that, and you know, for anything negative that comes out of that, I'm sure the local liberals will just shrug their shoulders. Oh, well, that's the price of helping people or whatever. 7:42, we'll come back and talk about this a little bit more. 523-1450 on AM Las Cruces with Kelly O'Connell.
Love me one time. Do not speak. Love me one time.
You know, it is terribly sad. Why would you have an 18-year-old person in ninth grade? I mean, sounds like something we'd try to increase the graduation rate. But here's a little bit more on this Maryland rape.
Under fire, moving beyond.
Sheriff Clark.
Hashtags of race, crime, and politics for a better America. Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. Sheriff, I got to imagine as part of your daily job, you have to deal with people that suffer like these parents, and probably there have been those moments you have to tell them, oh, sorry, your son and daughter is dead. Sorry, they're not alive. What happened? They got killed. And then in the case of it's an illegal immigrant, then you say, why does our government not protect the American people?
Sean, it rips my heart out to listen to those angel moms, and may God comfort them in their time of grief. Look, this stuff is avoidable. That's stuff that angers me. We're talking about some failed policies, these sanctuary cities. we're not asking much. When I say we, I'm talking about ICE officials. We're talking about this anti-detainer policy that many of these sanctuary cities adhere to, where they will not hang on to individuals until ICE can get the paperwork together and the case together to schedule them for deportation. That's not asking a lot just to hang on to them. These things are avoidable. I heard about that rape case, that young 14-year-old girl, these subhuman creeps. And the thing that, really angered me is one of those guys was out awaiting a deportation hearing. That's why I said these anti-detainer policies. We don't need to change the law. We're not asking local officials, as ICE anyway, is not asking local officials to enforce immigration. They're just talking, asking them to honor a detainer, a lawful piece of paper that says, hold on to this individual until we can get the deportation schedule. These things are killing communities. They're killing cities. It is a obviously, it's become a haven for criminal activity, these sanctuary cities.
How do you?
This is going to come to an end. I thank God every day since the November election that Donald Trump is the president of the United States. We are going to get our arms around this thing. I've made it clear I'm going to.
All right. So, you know, it's just common sense that the people who are illegal, including illegal criminals, are going to go to sanctuary cities. Now, here's a little more from Clark on defunding sanctuary cities. Now, the mayor got up and said $1 million. There's a budget fight. We only get $1 million from the state. I don't think that's probably true. Somebody needs to look into this. But, we're going to be a sanctuary city. At what point, when they pull all of our funding, do we put up a white flag?
100 cities in America have declared sanctuary status for illegals. Our next guest.
There are 500 or more.
Says
the entire state of California, the entire state of Oregon, are sanctuary cities.
There is no sanctuary for American citizens. Joining us now, author of the book Cop Under Fire, that will be Sheriff Mr. Clark, David Clark. Sheriff, welcome back. Good to see you, sir.
My pleasure, as always.
So, myself, I, now as a newly arrived immigrant and a fully fledged American citizen, you say that I have fewer rights than does an illegal in New York City or other sanctuary city? Is that accurate?
Well, I don't know if you have fewer rights, but you have fewer protections. In some of these cities, you mentioned 500. They're aiding and abetting criminality when they allow safe haven and safe harbor for people who are in the country illegally and have been arrested or convicted of some very serious crimes. So we're not talking about the person who comes into the country illegally and, you know, tries to blend in. And I'm not sanctioning that, but we're talking about criminal illegal aliens. We have one in Milwaukee this week who has a criminal history going back to 2011 in a catch and release situation. Well, just last week, he pointed a firearm at his girlfriend, at his young children, threatened them, beat them. And now he's being held. And trust me, after this one, he will be deported, because we are and we have been assisting ICE in the deportation of criminal illegal aliens.
Are you doing what you're supposed to do? If you are assisting ICE, the feds, in deporting criminal aliens from a sanctuary city, are you doing what you're supposed to do, or are you breaking the protocol of sanctuary cities?
I'm doing what the people of Milwaukee elected me to do. Look, I have an obligation, a duty and an obligation to protect people, but specifically, not only, but specifically law-abiding people as well when they're victimized by crime. And so that's why there's no pushback here. You know, this stuff has been polled in terms of law enforcement, local law enforcement. We don't have to do this.
All right. So we're under, I think, the same agreement here is that we're not going to do anything about this. Who is going to suffer? It's the people that are victimized by the criminals. Most of the illegals are not criminals, you say? Okay. But what about the ones that are? 750. Take a quick break and come back and hear Paul Tompkins on Mirrors. Mirrors and Sinks. By the way, outrage as double rapist moves to women's prison after sex change treatment. Father of three, Martin Ponting, who got life in prison after attacking two girls in England, has now been moved to a women's prison as he gets female hormones and he awaits his sex change. And did you know a lot of these people that get sex changes are not even then sleeping with the opposite sex? Believe it or not, there are many instances of men, for example, getting sex changes and then becoming a lesbian. So anyway, here's Paul Tompkins, Sink in the Mirror.
I like scary movies because I think we all like to be scared. That's not true, but that is something that dumb actors say when they go on talk shows to promote their scary movie. Like, why did you take this role? Well, I think because we all like to be scared. No, we do not. We do not. Do you know why? It's scary. That's why nobody likes it. If you walk down the street, somebody sticks a gun in your face, your reaction is not, this is awesome! What a roller coaster ride I am on right now with this experience. What a thrill and a chill! But there's a moment in any scary movie that will get me every single time. And it's the moment where you have your hero, right? He's the only guy that is doing anything about these werewolves or whatever. He's having a hell of a time. There's a break in the action, finds himself in some building or other. He goes into the bathroom. All he wants to do is just splash some cold water on his face, right? Get a little, you know, refresh himself a little bit. He's not done fighting the monsters. So, same every time. Turns on the water. And then he looks in the mirror first, as if to say, it's you and me, buddy. It is nuts out there. Tell you what, old friend, why don't we treat ourselves to a little cold water on the face? I bet that'll make things seem a lot less bleak. So he goes down and he splashes the water on his face. And then he comes back up. Hideous monster in the mirror! Gets me every single time. And I know that it's coming too. Like as soon as I see the sink, I'm like, oh, here we go. It's going to happen. Now look. I know I'm a grown man and movies are fake, right? But I have a bathroom. There's a mirror and a sink in there. Sometimes I'm alone in the house. But then recently I realized I don't have to be scared of this anymore because my bathroom is too small for this to realistically happen. And in order for a monster to get the drop on me, the phrase, excuse me, would have to be used. Like if he really wanted to go for the effect, right? Like if the monster was like, oh man, when he comes back up from that sink, it is going to be, this guy's going to lose his mind. I think they take pleasure in it because they're monsters. It's like if I'm putting water on my face and I hear, excuse me, just want to get by here. Ah-ha! Well, look who it is. Should have turned into a bat or something, stupid. Totally know you're in here. You just get out of here. Just go. You are the worst monster. Hey, sorry about that worst monster crack. I didn't need to go that far. I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at the situation. All right? Okay. I'll see you out there. I'm going to kill you.
Tuning in today, and kind of an interesting guy, Gorsuch. I don't think he could have possibly done a better job. I've never seen anybody better. The guy is got mad gifts, you know. He's really tremendously likable, and he was all over those questions, and I don't think they can stop him. I really don't, even if they do this full thing. I think he's such a likable and seems like such a reasonable person that even people that want to be beloved by their constituents by shutting down the Supreme Court conservative are not going to go for it. There's going to be enough people. What do they need? 8? So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Have a great day. Kelly O'Connell will come back in 22 hours and do it again. AM Las Cruces with Ben Rossin's report tomorrow. Have a good day. Ciao.
7:59. Love me two times, I've gone away. Love me two times, I've gone away. Oh, yeah!